This summer, we enter a new era of Star Wars.
You mean the dawn of the Star Wars canon timeline podcast?
Yeah, sure, that too. But I was obviously talking about The Acolyte. We've got to cover that on the Lorehounds.
Oh, but the Star Wars canon timeline podcast is exactly at that point in the timeline, the end of the High Republic, 100 years before the prequel trilogy. We've got to cover it there.
Why not both?
Okay, deal.
It's the first live-action Star War outside the Skywalker saga. Nobody can miss this.
Listeners, kick off your hot lore summer weekends with scene-by-scene breakdowns of The Acolyte, found in both the Star Wars Canon Timeline podcast and the Lorehounds Mother Feed.
And the Lorehounds Star Wars Feed.
Wherever you like to listen, a couple of days after each new episode is released.
Welcome to Properly Howard, a podcast that reviews classic films and other pulp fiction. Today we look at the 1980 film Hero at Large. Starring John Ritter as a down-on-his-luck actor, this movie probably didn't have to be made. With me to discuss this film, as always, is Dr. Anthony Ladon.
You chose this film, Steve.
I did.
Now that you've seen the film, how do you feel about that choice?
When you get a chance to say, when you see something that you've never seen, like, this is the worst car chase I've ever seen in my life in this movie. So that in and of itself is special, right?
Like, goes down underneath and one of them stays on the surface.
That's and then it just, creative. And then it just completely flips over. I don't even know how the car flipped over. It's amazing. Whatever the opposite of the car chase in Bullet is, this might be it. I mean, it is. How did he get the taxi cab? Like, he doesn't drive a cab?
Yeah, he does. Earlier, I'm an expert on this film now. earlier, when she asked him what he does for, you know, if he acts professionally, he says sometimes, and she's like, "Well, what do you do other times?" And he says, "I drive a taxi." And that turns her off because she really wants her man to be
that
sort of
that a, turns her off.
That yes, she's not impressed with him because he lives on the wrong side of town. He's an out of work actor who drives a taxi cab. I like that they brought that in. I like that little extra detail. Like, what does he do for actual money? Well, he's not working.
But he doesn't use that taxi cab money to pay rent, obviously. He's only trying to pay rent with residual checks from his commercial.
My sense is that he's not great with money. That is my sense of this. I was going to ask you if you had an elevator pitch for this.
Well, I have an idea of what the elevator pitch was. It was simply, John Ritter's really hot right now. And that's it. Like, I mean, there is no reason to have John Ritter in this movie. Like, the whole appeal of John Ritter at this time is that he's slapsticky, he's goofy, he's got good comedic timing, and there you go. But what if we made a movie that's a comedy, but he does none of those things ever? In fact, we're going to have him be, like, mostly, like, breathy and subdued, like he's in an old-timey movie trying to settle down a hysterical woman.
Now,
like,
wait a second here. Wait a second. You didn't find any of this funny? I thought he was charming in this film. I thought he had a couple great lines. Maybe I like this film more than you do.
My favorite part is whenever he's doing, like, the acting scenes, he portrays the actor like he kind of does this over-the-top fist clench thing. But then when he's in a dramatic scene, he does the fist clench thing that he was kind of mocking. Like, so it's I mean, like, nothing happens. It's crazy to me.
Look, I feel like
nothing happens.
I feel like you're not giving this movie the credit it deserves.
I mean, even when something happens, like, nothing's happening.
Okay, here's my elevator pitch for the movie. What if Batman had no muscles, no money, and no brains?
Nope. Yeah, nothing.
That would be, honestly, kind of interested. Kind of interested. A poor Batman who's given no thought to his body armor and not too bright. Not too bright.
There's a point where, like, he's like working out, mm-hmm. and Captain Avenger is on TV, and he's just like miming along with him. And
he's
like,
really into the part. He's an actor. He's trying to imagine.
No, but he looks at it with, like,
in that role. He's slipping into the skin of Captain Avenger. No, Steve.
See, that's the thing, is he doesn't strike me as he wants the role. He just is like, he's a child. Just
which is all right. So here's an interesting,
which all these, here's the thing, is all the elements that, like, I'm like, oh, so he's kind of like, maybe he's not okay. And I'm like, this would be an amazing dark comedy. Like, you know what I mean? Like, if redone, like, he's kind of a simpleton, and because what I think is interesting is that, like, I had was under the impression, based on like, sort of the tag and everything, that, like, maybe he accidentally stopped a crime.
And no, in fact, I want you to listen to this.
Captain Avenger,
you got the knife, and you get him.
Mind if I drop in?
He never feels as alive as when he's actually Captain Avenger. And he thinks, I'm wearing a superhero suit. These two old shop owners, they need someone to step in and menace these street toughs. Why not me? I've got a visor.
I have a visor. It's very reminiscent of the RoboCop scene where RoboCop comes in and stops the guy who wants to rob the place. It's a little more violent and a little more interesting, but mind if I drop in? I mean, like, that's the thing, is that Ritter never, like, that's the most animated he gets. Like, the rest of the time, he's just, hey, it just, oh, ah. Unless he's doing, like, an offensive Chinese affect, but otherwise, He's just always, like, everything is so breathy and, like, mm-hmm. oddly sensual, and it's a really odd performance in a movie that, like, should have been, in my opinion, a lot more, like, over the top, kind of goofy and fun, because he's a fake superhero. But instead, it's like almost plays itself like, at times, like, maybe this is a drama. Like, no, not with those shorts.
This is a particular time in movie making history where it's not enough to just have a comedy, and it's not just enough to have a romantic comedy. You also have to make some kind of social commentary with it. You have to talk about sort of, like, you know, the goodness at the heart of the people of New York City. And maybe if we could just draw it out by, you know, tapping into their better angels, the entire city will be a better place. That's a very common thing with movies of this period. And you know, if this was made today, it would sort of make fun of the entire thing. But I think that the movie really wants you to like him, which,
right,
if you want a character who's likable, who's better than John Ritter?
It's makes perfect sense to get a likable guy like a John Ritter who can play this role. But like I said, it's like, like, you remember the movie Opportunity Knocks?
Because we all know that your major life decisions aren't made in the boardroom. They're made in the bathroom.
It was Carvey's first, like, lead role, right? Like, he'd been in movies, but this is his first.
It was sort of like an excuse for him to do impressions.
Exactly, right? So they have a plot. It's kind of interesting. It's, you know, it's a little bit formulaic, but ultimately there are plenty of opportunities where he's going to do a George Bush impression, mm-hmm. where he's going to do a Mick Jagger impression. He's going to do a lot of these things that like the reason that you like him are going to be on display. That's why I'm like, I go back to this. I'm like, they didn't do any of that. Like, you, why have Ritter? Why pick Ritter? I mean, outside of just likability, why pick him to do this role, but then be like, hey, don't fall over one couch. Not on okay. one couch.
All right. But here's, let me push back on this. He does fall over a fair amount. Good physical comedy. He bangs him into a doorway. And then he spends a lot of the film in a woman's apartment. And true. half naked in a woman's apartment. And who does that better than John Ritter?
I mean, what I love, one of my favorite things about John Ritter, and when you see him in almost any film, is he is a hairy, hairy human being. And he's always had, regardless of whether it was in Skin Deep or, you know, what have you, whatever, he's got a shirt, he always has that shave line. That shave line that, like, goes around, like, the shoulder to upper, like, collarbone, and it's just like a real clean shave line there. Like, he does work when he gets ready in the morning.
All I heard was that John Ritter is really hot right now. That's what I heard. Let's talk about John Ritter. I know no one else on planet Earth who is a greater appreciator of John Ritter than you are. My guess is that you're most interested in the fine work he did on The Love Boat. Is that right?
Amazing work in The Love Boat. Dressed as a woman, because that's how he was able to sneak on, because there was no other tickets left. But I think a woman was
the range on this guy.
Yeah, and Captain Steubing was immediately smitten, which, I mean, he's the man.
Love Boat, often inspired by Looney Tunes episodes.
Exactly. Yeah, so I, as a Ritter fan, I was actually like, all right, let's see this. That's kind of why I wanted to give this a little look-see. Because he does, I mean, he has a filmography. He does tend to, like, lean more towards the sitcoms. But
how many times have you cycled through Three's Company as a rewatch? Boy,
it's almost impossible to calculate. You know, but, like, his filmography, you got, like, Problem Child and Stay Tuned.
Famously in Sling Blade.
Famously in Sling Blade, Skin Deep, which I think he's a little bit more, like, a lot more of his physical stuff is on display. And it's interesting because he plays, like, kind of the scoundrel, you know, with the glow-in-the-dark condom lightsaber fight.
When did you first start watching Three's Company?
I don't know, it was like probably 8 or 9.
I was not allowed to watch Three's Company. And so it was always a little tricky because there were shows that I could watch, like I Dream of Jeannie, Bewitched. You know, these were sort of shows that were on reruns that I would cycle through. But then I would always have to leave the television whenever Three's Company came on. And the reason for this is that this is a guy living with two girls in a house. None of them are married. And so they are clearly living in sin. We are not going to allow Three's Company in this house, young man. So clearly your mom didn't have those scruples. She was fine with this entire debauched scenario.
Yeah, I mean, being a latchkey kid, I could kind of watch whatever I wanted. I was just drawn to it. I mean, we all enjoyed it. I mean, you know, there were certain things I didn't get at the time. You know, like the marijuana episode, I really didn't understand, but the nude beach stuff, I was like, okay. But it was, you know, at the time, pretty racy, I suppose, and scandalous for that era, sure. So, yeah, so John Ritter is, like, the it guy. And famously, people that go from sitcoms to, like, their first film, like, it usually isn't great. You know, I mean, I know people that weren't able to make that, like, constant leap to the screen for whatever it is, like Shelley Long, you know, was it David Caruso, like all these folks eventually make their way back to TV, it seems like, right?
So I've got a different theory on this. I mean, it could be that as well, but my sense is that a quality film usually wasn't going to be offered to a television actor, you know, Back to the Future being the notable exception here. But usually if you had a film that had a high quality script and you had a great director on the project and it had some money behind it, you're not going to go for a TV actor back in the day. You're going to go with a movie actor because they were just a class above, or at least that's so the industry thought back then. So it usually for a television actor, it was usually like, if I could just eke my way in to a film that does okay, maybe I could make that jump from television actor to film actor. But it was not an easy jump to make. And so I wonder if the options available to someone like John Ritter would have been fairly limited.
Interesting. Maybe. You would think you would, you know, have opportunity to capitalize on some already built in star value, but I think maybe that you might be onto something in terms of, like, there might still be a delineation in terms of caliber of actor. Like, if you're that good, you wouldn't be on TV.
Sure. Right. And there were levels to this kind of thing. You know, maybe if you were on prime time, you know, Thursday night, NBC, you had that kind of heat behind you, then maybe it's easier to make the jump, right? Maybe it's easier to go from Cheers to 3 Men and a Baby or something like that.
Sure.
I don't know. I mean, when does Three's Company end its television run?
Probably like in 82, 83, maybe. And then he goes on to, then they do the spinoff, Three's a Crowd, right? And it was so poorly received that kind of, I think, put a dent in his workload, I think.
I mean, Three's Company is one of these shows where I kind of feel like it went on maybe 3 years too long.
Yeah, because after Suzanne Somers leaves, right, it sort of changes it up a little bit, right? You bring in Terry and it kind of changes the dynamic. It still goes on for a little bit, but like it definitely doesn't have the same chemistry, the same vibe. I mean, it survives the Ropers leaving for their own show, and Mr. Furley comes in and actually, some might argue, elevates the relationship from the landlord to the tenants. That's how good Hero at Large is that we're spending most of our time talking about Three's Company.
Now, I don't want to assume that people listening to this took the time to watch Hero at Large. You know, could be the thing.
My wife did not. In fact, I didn't even get to watch it on the TV. I had to watch it on my computer.
So it could be that maybe you haven't seen this. I watched it on Tubi. You can also watch the entire thing for free on YouTube, and I don't mean YouTube TV. No one can.
It's just a webcam of some guy watching it.
The basic storyline is that John Ritter, playing a character named Steve Nichols, is an underemployed actor who's been hired to promote a movie. So he's not actually the main actor of the movie, Captain Avenger. He's just hired to go to various places around New York City and hype up the movie. At one point, you see him on the bus with, like, I don't know, 30 other Captain Avengers who are all hired.
A bus that has a Captain Avenger on top.
That's right. So the publicist for this thing is part of the narrative from the very beginning. He'll come in a little bit later. John Ritter is trying to make it in New York as a stage actor. He's also trying to ensorcel the woman who lives next door, who's not all that impressed. But one day, after his little promotional job, he's wearing the Captain Avenger suit. He's walking home. He goes in to get some milk, and he stops a robbery from happening. And this becomes big news.
It becomes news.
Parallel to this, New York City is abuzz with this news.
He's having to run around to tell people to watch it, and like nobody is.
Parallel to this, the mayor is running a re-election campaign and he can't get any traction. The publicist happens also to work for the mayor, and he decides he's going to get these two together.
Can he bring you the election in a box, gift wrapped? Can he do that, Calvin?
What are you talking about?
Captain Avenger.
That's what I'm talking about. How do you like what's been happening? How would you like him to keep it up? How would you like it if he stayed in action right up until election day?
What's the point?
The point is, when the people feel good about the city, they feel good about the administration, right? Well, the people feel good about the city today because of him.
A comic book hero.
Read the papers, Calvin. Watch the news. New York loves Captain Avenger.
So the premise of this is... this is the exact opposite from Batman. Gotham hates the idea of Batman.
Sure.
Well, maybe the people like Batman, but the police hate him. And the politicians hate him too. They don't want to be known for having a vigilante around, but this particular mayor decides he's going to lean into it. He's actually going to ride the coattails of Captain Avenger to political victory. Here's my question to you, Steve. Which is the right approach? To vilify the vigilante or to actually use the vigilante for political benefit?
Wow, that's a really deep question, and I'm glad that Hero at Large has brought this to the forefront. you know, I think, well, the answer has got to be somewhere in between, right? I mean, a vigilante, I think you have to go with the former, right? I mean, as soon as you start using a person in a costume who you don't even understand their motivations for political gain, that seems like a problem. Because Batman,
you think
typically,
so?
So Batman typically, you know, Batman's a billionaire, obviously, but like his motivations, you know, might not necessarily be justice. It might actually be a little bit of revenge. It could be just trying to deal with his own psychosis. In the case of Captain Avenger, I don't think he's okay.
So you don't think it's politically advantageous for the mayor of New York to ally himself with a caped crusader?
Well, and that's the thing I think is interesting about this is that it doesn't play, like, the movie doesn't know what it wants to say, right? It doesn't, like, it becomes,
yes,
really...
Yes, it does. It's saying that the people of New York City are deep down, they're good, they care about things like hope and justice.
Yeah, which is not true. And just categorically untrue. So that's easy. And then, but the other part of it is like, he's like, I don't understand why he gets reluctant all of a sudden, right? Like he makes no sense ever.
My favorite was when he gets shot and he says, well, if the criminals are going to start using real bullets, I'll retire.
Yeah. You've done two things.
My impression is that criminals use live bullets all the time.
Well, the first people he went after used live knives. He just didn't get stabbed. He's armed with nothing but a weird visor that there's no way that it's good for you. Like, I don't know what the visor only is to tint if you look up.
I think that the visor is a metaphor for a skewed perspective on reality.
Is that what it is? He's looking through the world through turquoise colored glasses.
So I think that there's actually an interesting conversation to have here. At some point.
Are you sure?
I'm not sure, but I'm going to try.
I like how we're kind of flipping roles here because typically, you're the one saying, no, Howard the Duck is dog shit. And I'm like, no.
Listen, at some point, the superhero narrative shifted. You went from someone like Superman, who's kind of a friend of the police, who's sort of on the side of America. Like, he's a good guy who works for the good guys, and everyone's happy for that.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, you move into what I would call almost a 1980s cynicism, where the superhero might be out to do good things, but the politicians don't like them and the police don't like them. And sometimes they're treated as freaks. It's almost like it's almost this shift to something closer to political realism, where it's like, if someone really was a superhero, would people actually like them? And this movie clearly is working with the previous paradigm. the politicians want to get on board with this guy. He's a friend of the police. He's a friend to the firefighters. The media, he has a fraught relationship with the media, whatever. But that shift hasn't happened yet in superhero movies. You still have this paradigm where a city like New York will simply embrace a vigilante in spandex. You know, no one thinks better of it. Too much? Is it too much?
Mm-hmm. You're describing a movie I wouldn't mind watching. Is the A backwards on his...
The A bugs me so much.
It bothers me so much. I'm like, it's for sure flipped. Like, it's mirror imaged. It's got to go the other way. It has to, right?
Or flip it. Flip it sideways, maybe?
Just anything. It's really bothersome.
It's a big problem.
I got a lot of anxiety every time I had to see that logo.
Listen, you'll never believe what just happened to me. You know that little grocery store on Bleecker Street? No, hey, Jerry. That's all right. I'll tell you about it later. Yeah. Okay, if I come. All right. Yeah. All right, I'll talk to you later.
So he's talking to Jerry on
great
the phone.
Scene. Great, great, important scene to leave in the movie. Do not edit that out.
He's talking to Jerry on the phone. He couldn't.
You left in an actual phone conversation. Just an like that moved nothing. It just was like, oh, I'll call you later. That scene gets kept in there.
It's left in for a particular purpose, which I want to talk about later. But the reason why I like this scene is that you get to hear what's happening on Jerry's end of the phone call too.
Right.
And to me, I'm just imagining him being tickled by like four or five people.
Yeah, he's calling in the middle of a slumber party. He's like,
feathers everywhere.
they're actually filming an episode of I'd Buy That for a Dollar from the RoboCop universe. I'll call you later. I mean, everything. Why is he so gentle? Why is he so impossibly soft?
He's a good guy. That's the thing. He's the one.
You'll never guess what happened on Bleecker Street.
He's a good guy. You're supposed to like him. The reason why that phone call is left in is because deep down he's lonely and he just wants to share this.
I wonder why he's lonely. The whole movie is crazy. Like the dialogue and the interactions, the whole movie feels like it was written as a musical and they just didn't put any of the musical scenes in. Like they all build to a part where they're going to start singing and then it just doesn't happen.
Can we talk about how he woos Jolene?
Has there been a less interested actress in any movie than Ann Archer in this? I mean, she like owed somebody a favor. I mean, she doesn't even have chemistry with herself.
I like that she's carrying a plant and he offers to carry it for her in the hallway. She's clearly trying to get rid of him. She can't wait to get rid of this guy who's hounding her in the hallway, but he's taken her houseplant as hostage. I guess she was living with Milo before. Is that your sense of these things?
Yeah, man, that guy was hideous.
And she's decided to leave him, I guess, and move to a smaller apartment in a more affordable side of town.
If you're gonna take so long between takes, it's gonna melt.
It has to be a beautiful eclair, okay? The most beautiful eclair in the world.
I've got an entire refrigerator full. Would you bring another pastry, Jeff?
And she's working for him on the set. And he's got very strong opinions about eclairs.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, honestly, I don't think that this is bad. I think if you're going to do something, do it right. Do it well. You know, if there's going to be an eclair in the scene, you don't want a melted eclair, right?
The details that get left in versus what doesn't is just, it's remarkable to me. Here's the thing is there is... Like I said, there are some interesting ideas, and the movie opts at times to just not do anything about them. Like they'll just have scenes for just no reason. that don't do anything with what they're trying to do. Like, I mean, the idea that like they're manufacturing heroics for political gain is actually pretty interesting. Like that's an interesting idea, I suppose. If you're gonna, you know, I mean, I mean, Bert Convy is very convincing as somebody who might mm-hmm. be orchestrating such a politically savvy plan as it is to have a fake superhero stopping fake crimes. So, but like, it takes so long to get there, right? Like, he does two things. And then he's in a bathrobe for a bunch, and he's in a bath, in a bubble bath. Which, by the way, bubble baths just don't happen. You've got to put the bubble bath in.
He's not in a
like,
hurry.
That's a conscious choice. When you're at somebody's house and you're kind of squatting for a little bit, and it's like, hey, can I take a bath with the door open? Sure, why wouldn't you? Bubble bath, though. Do you have a bubble bath?
If you are staying as a guest in someone's house and you take a bath, you're a monster. You should be treated like a monster, because that's what you are. You don't take a bath in someone else's apartment. To add bubbles to the equation, this shows you the depravity of this man's soul.
I mean, it's so long to fill the tub, and then, I mean, it's just...
Do you think she finds it charming, or do you think that she just feels trapped?
I don't think she changes in her expression throughout the entirety of the movie.
I did not know that Kevin Bacon was in
it. That was a nice little treat.
Hey, Captain Avenger.
Yes, sir.
Let's see you fly.
I'm sorry, son. I don't fly.
Don't let him shit you, man. Anybody dresses like that, fly.
You mean he's a fruit?
You saw the picture, man. You don't fool around with girls. They're falling all over him, and you don't do nothing.
Hey, Captain Avenger. Can I throw you a missile?
Incredible scene.
Love me a little early Kevin Bacon.
Yeah.
I thought this must be his first movie. I guess he did a couple movies before this, but clearly pre-Footloose.
Yeah.
Let me just run this idea past you. So I was thinking about Kevin Bacon as a theme for an upcoming season. Then I saw Kevin Bacon in this film, and I thought, oh, geez, maybe it's kismet. Maybe I should suggest this idea to Steve. That we do a sort of a 7 degrees of Kevin Bacon theme for a season of Properly Howard, where one of us begins with a movie that Kevin Bacon's in, and then the other one has to choose a different movie that one of his co-stars was in.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
And then it goes back and forth, and basically we end up 7 degrees away from Kevin Bacon. Just because we're choosing actors that overlap with those films.
Or do we try to then get back to Kevin Bacon?
That would be interesting if it circles back, right? Which I guess it wouldn't be that hard to circle back to Kevin Bacon. I mean, we could also put other parameters on this, but I kind of feel like we don't want to put too many parameters on this.
That's kind of your thing.
Yeah, I know. I know it is. I would like, if it's going to be a Kevin Bacon themed season, I would like him to be in a few different. True, okay, true. What about this? What if we both choose a Kevin Bacon movie?
If we really want to complicate it, which I think is deep down what mm-hmm. you want, is we each pick one. One starts, one is the middle. We have to work our way back to it, and then we can work our way out.
Oh, jeez. I have faith that we could probably pull that off. I don't know that these movies will be any good, but that has never stopped us before.
Well, because we're going to start with Hero at Large, which means we have to then do a Ritter or Bert Convy movie.
I'm happy to cover this movie again. I feel like there's a lot on the table that we've not talked about. Steve, is there a trope, a cliche, or device in this movie that you enjoyed?
I like the, I love the crowd turning on him.
Another actor, the so-called hold-up man. This man is prepared to admit that the whole train robbery was staged, and it is as phony as Captain Avenger himself.
Is it true? Is it fake? Is it fake?
No, not at first, but later on.
I like that. I like it when a crowd is like, we want Captain Avenger, which is the most clunky crowd chant in the history of crowd chants. and then, is it true?
I like a fight in a subway. And I was wondering, like, I was thinking, those always work. It's like, this thing has got no mind of its own. You're in a enclosed space. You're going to have witnesses. You're going to have, you know, interesting things to bounce off of. You've got actual poles to swing on. If you're going to film a fight scene, why not do it in a subway car? It's perfect. And then I was asking myself, is that okay? So that's become a trope, but is this the first movie to do it?
Oh, I don't know. I can't imagine.
I mean, there's not a lot of superhero, live action superhero movies out there at this point. You've got Superman. Is Superman 2 out yet? I don't know.
That's a good question. I feel like that might not be. And maybe that's part of the problem, right? Is that we haven't really fleshed out all these the concepts of superheroes on screen as much as we have now, right?
Mm.
And so they're playing with things maybe that they're in some ways might be ahead of their time. I'm, you know, trying to give it benefit of the doubt. Because there's it doesn't play itself as a superhero movie all that often.
No, it's supposed to be a rom-com, I suppose.
I guess. Like, there's no reason for these two to be together or even seem to like each other. It's weird. It's a very weird movie.
Steve, is there a tweak that you'd make to this movie to improve it?
Oh, yeah. I'd redo the whole thing. But I think, like I said, the tweak is you have to decide what you are, right? Like, is it a commentary on manipulating, you know, for political gain? Is there is it about a guy who loses himself in the role because he's a wannabe actor? And so it's like, hey, look, you can be a superhero, but it has to be, you know, you're fake. Essentially, you're mm-hmm. a fraud, right? And I feel like it does all of those things and none of them at the same time, right? So I think it's a matter of just knowing what it is you're trying to prove out. Because at the end, like, you get this big scene where he goes in and he goes to save Johnny, who I thought was a baby.
That's how his mother sees him.
Because my baby's up there. Where's my son? Also, like,
how about check the bathroom next time?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know he's not in there, but you're also at the window. Like, just...
my tweak would be, I would have appreciated, like, a quirky, nosy, but well-intentioned neighbor. One more guy in the building to bring a little bit more personality to all of those scenes. Because clearly Jolene needs help.
Yeah, there's a lot of opportunity for good things to happen.
Let me ask you this. Does this movie work if it's Tom Hanks? Because this is about the same time that Tom Hanks is doing movies kind of like this, right? This is around the time that Splash is happening.
Yeah,
is this movie considerably better with Tom Hanks?
Yeah, and this might be a hard part for me to reconcile, given my Ritter appreciation. Is I think Ritter's the wrong guy, because I think or he's just not directed well enough, right? Like, I think if he was a little goofier and a little bit more out there, like, I think he tries to play the charming sweet guy so much that you lose any necessary edge, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? Mm-hmm. And maybe Hanks could have brought a little bit more of that out there just naturally. Because I think of him in, like, in Splash and Money Pit, and there's, like, maybe there's a little bit more of an edge, a little bit more of snark that Ritter's just missing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, and again, I don't know if that's his choice. I don't know if it's a director choice, but, like, Ritter should have been a little bit more, like, there should have been more opportunities to maybe be unlikable and, like, maybe make that transition. Like, he's just a sweet guy who's trying his best.
I like to see him lose his temper. Just once I want to see him lose his temper.
These are bad firemen, right?
These firemen are the worst.
They're bad. They're like, they're real bad at their job. They're like, well, we're not going into the fire. Like, that's kind of the oath, bro. That's like a doctor going, you know what? I'm not sending any of my men in there. They're going to get blood on them. It's like, you're firemen. It's just what you do. It's, you know that there's a child up there.
Is this movie better, worse, or on par with a Ron Howard film?
Oh, Ron Howard would have crushed this film. This is a Howard minus 17.
All right, I'm going to say Howard minus 3. I actually like this movie. I felt like I had a lot of fun watching this movie. It's got a lot of flaws. Clearly, it could have been done a lot better. It gave me good feelings. I enjoyed seeing Ritter. I think this is by far the sexiest Ritter has ever been. I like the premise.
I love that. That's one of the reasons why you like this movie is how sexy Ritter is.
He's just off the charts sexy in this movie,
which is amazing because this is the worst superhero outfit, the least flattering superhero outfit in the history of anything.
Yeah, I know. But half of the movie, he's just in a towel in this woman's apartment
or in a pink robe, satin robe.
Again, sexiest Ritter ever. So for me, this is a Howard minus 3. I think clearly it's much better in the hands of Ron Howard. And I think if it's Ron Howard, I think it is someone like Hanks. And I think maybe this movie is remembered at all. I was going to say remembered more fondly.
At all, yeah.
The only one that remembers this movie. And you've never seen it.
Yeah, no, I know. Yeah, it's funny because I do wonder if I would have had a different perspective on it if I watched it when I was younger and had some nostalgic affinity for it. So it was hard. Like, this is a hard one for me to watched it and then I stopped it and then I started rewatching it and I got to a point where I'm just like, I don't think I can find the goodness I wanted to. I really wanted to. And so I'm really glad that you haven't helped me change my mind. But I'm glad that you have a counterpoint.
I'm not saying that this is a good movie. I gave it a Howard minus 3, but I will say that it wasn't the worst. It wasn't the worst thing we've ever covered on this.
Okay.
Podcast.
So what was worse? Teen Wolf 2?
Teen Wolf 2 was pretty bad for sure. Did not like Dracula.
Whoa. If you're going to tell me this is better than Bram Stoker's Dracula.
This is better than Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Wow.
Sure.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
You might be right, but.
Yeah. This movie has a certain charm to it that I appreciated.
It's a harmless movie.
I want to see that used as a. As a review, yes, on the back of the DVD cover.
This movie inspires like white noise machines, right? Like, this is just played in the background. Don't feel like you got to watch it.
Let's see here. Reception. Robert Ebert gave the film 2 stars out of 4, calling it a big, dumb, silly, good-hearted albatross of a comedy. He said that although the film might appeal to fans of John Ritter, it did not appeal to him. all right. Does this film have a half the battle, won the Grand moment?
Yeah, don't trust no politicians.
Oh, I was going to say, if you're going to get into bed with politics in New York City, you got to be prepared to answer at least one question from a reporter.
I think you could also take, in terms of, especially now, look at this movie, look at all the things that go on. You know, yes, there's a lot of flaws. Look, he wants to be a superhero. He sort of sells his soul at one point. He gets a chance at redemption. All that stuff is fine, but especially now in 2024, looking at it, take time for self-care. You know, you take the bubble bath, you know, take the time. You might be locked out of your apartment and have no belongings. You may have to stay at a stranger's house. They may offer you a opportunity to clean up. They mean shower, but if they don't specify shower, take the time, luxuriate.
This summer, we enter a new era of Star Wars.
You mean the dawn of the Star Wars canon timeline podcast?
Yeah, sure, that too. But I was obviously talking about The Acolyte. We've got to cover that on the Lorehounds.
Oh, but the Star Wars canon timeline podcast is exactly at that point in the timeline, the end of the High Republic, 100 years before the prequel trilogy. We've got to cover it there.
Why not both?
Okay, deal.
It's the first live-action Star Wars outside the Skywalker saga. Nobody can miss this.
Listeners, kick off your hot lore summer weekends with scene-by-scene breakdowns of The Acolyte, found in both the Star Wars Canon Timeline podcast and the Lorehounds Mother Feed.
And the Lorehounds Star Wars Feed.
Wherever you like to listen, a couple of days after each new episode is released.